Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in Radio DMG may or may not be the views and opinions of the DMGI's family of sites. All music used in this podcast is the property of whoever made it, and no copyright infringement is intended. God bless this albatross, and hold on tight for the awesome you're about to receive.
It's good to be the king.
And welcome to Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and here we are on November 14th, 2011. So, today's episode of Radio DMG, our 20th episode, sort of. Actually, it's not really our 20th, we're actually like at 22 or 23, but this is our 20th official episode. And we're not doing anything to celebrate, sorry. So, but what we are doing is we're going to do some more NDK audio, but first we're going to do some newsity. We've got just a slight bit of newsity, and then we're going to have the interview with Chris Kaysen and the interview with Tony Oliver. I have a lot more interviews, but I'm going to stretch them out because, hey, content, why not? So it's going to be a shorter episode than normal, but hey, gives you something a little bit more palatable than last week's, say, two-hour-long episode. And besides, I'm tired, it's a Monday, and there's a lot of Super Mario 3D Land to be played. Oh yes, Super Mario 3D Land, which came out, by the way, this weekend. This Sunday, the 13th. But let's get into the newsity, and we'll discuss that. And welcome back to Radio DMG, and let's go ahead and start the newsity. And I do say the word and a lot. I'm okay with it. So, here's what happened in the newsity. I guess, before we get into that, I might as well just tell you what I've been playing, because, why not? A lot of other podcasts do, and okay, I've just been playing a lot of Super Mario Brothers. Super Mario Brothers, New Super Mario Brothers, and Super Mario 3D Land, which is pretty great, actually. Pretty good stuff. You'll probably see a review of it by on Friday or Saturday. So, look forward to that. So, anyways, here's what happened. Oh, we put up some video of these, too. Super Mario 3D launched, and there was a big event in New York about it. Lots of people showed up. And we don't know what the first day sales are yet. However, there is a group that wasn't so happy with the launch of Super Mario 3D Land. Popular attention whores, PETA, launched an anti-Super Mario 3D Land flash game, stating that Mario is encouraging killing Tanukis, T-A-N-U-K-I, for their fur, despite the fact that the Tanuki suit is spelled T-A-N-O-O-K-I, and specifically references the mystical creature with magical balls, and not the raccoon dog fox thing in Japan. Also, one thing to note is that the Tanuki, T-A-N-U-K-I, is listed as a least concern by the IUCN. The IUCN is the International Union for Conservation of Nature. An LC rating means that the Tanuki is pretty much a pest, with no danger to it at all. It is the Japanese equivalent of that pesky raccoon that knocks over your trash can. It is the large-scale, nasty biting equivalent of the mice or rats that made their way into your basement to eat your books and laundry. I mean, PETA themselves actually kill more animals every year than vets. Remember, people, deer in the United States are a least concern status. They are pests and they taste good. So kill Bambi and his mother and eat them with a side of fries. On a side note, polar bears are a vulnerable status on that list, meaning they could be endangered if there were a huge natural disaster. But right now, the counts of polar bears show that they are close to becoming not threatening and then least concerned in the near future. Personally, they are pests to the Inuits. Well, delicious, but also murderous pests. I just wish there was a place I could buy polar bear meat, which I would eat with a side of venison while playing Super Mario 3D Land and drinking some wonderful red wine that's red like blood. I would raise my glass of fine red wine and a toast to Ingrid Newkirk, Bill Maher, Peter Singer, and Ira Einhorn. Because, you know, nothing goes good with, better with wine than toasting complete idiots. People just need to remember that Ingrid Newkirk is the person who, well, Peter Singer is the guy who wrote a paper back in the 70s about the personhood of animals. You see, these are people who want personhood for your dogs and cats, but not for an unborn child. There's kind of a disconnect there. But anyways, Peter Singer would teach that humans were a bit of a parasite on the earth and they're not naturally supposed to be there, were an evolutionary mistake, and that animals are infinitely superior. He helped found both PETA with Ingrid Newkirk, who's a disciple of his, and another group called the Animal Liberation Front. The Animal Liberation Front is a place that would blow up a child care center if they owned hamsters. These are the people who are violent extremists. They spike trees, which leads to damaged logging equipment and death. They've bombed laboratories and animal testing facilities. They're just bad people. Ira Einhorn is a person who, he helped found Earth Day, but he's also referred to as the Unicorn Killer because he killed and maimed and, well, yeah, he murdered, maimed, and sexually, horrible things to several women. And he was convicted of that, and he's the founder of Earth Day, which is why I don't celebrate it. Because why would I want to celebrate a holiday that celebrates the ideals of a murderer, of a madman, of a terrible person? I throw Bill Maher into that because this is a guy who once said in U.S. Magazine, February 1999, this is an actual quote from Bill Maher, and I would think twice about ever watching his shows or supporting him in any way. He said this.
To those people who say, my father is alive because of animal experimentation, I say, yeah, well, good for you. This dog died so your father could live. Sorry, but I am just not behind that kind of a trade-off.
These are sick people. And they're out there just trying to get our attention and try and prevent us from playing a good game. So you know what? Let's not pay them any attention. You see, when you don't pay attention to something, it may get louder and louder and louder and more annoyed. The thing is, we give PETA too much press time. I've given it way too much time just talking about it in the news city. But you have to realize these are sick, sick people. And when they're not occupying Wall Street, they're out there trying to get you to stop playing Super Mario 3D Land. So my opinion is raise your 3DS high and bask in your freedom to play Super Mario 3D Land. Go out and buy a 3DS and play Super Mario 3D Land. It is a good game. It is worth your time. Buy multiple copies of it so everyone can play. It is a great game. So there you have it. That's pretty much the newsity. We're going to go into our first feature theme. And then we're going to have a musical interlude, which is actually from a from the musical group 6955. Let's see, which one are we going to... We'll probably play something off of their... okay, let me bring up my stuff over here. Looking for my music. Oh, there it is. Yeah, there is a 6955 EP called Nintendo Museum, and we're gonna play one of their tracks off of that album between our two interviews. So we're gonna start out with the Chris Kasson interview, which there's a little bit of politics in it. Honestly, remember, here at DMG Ice, we have none of the opinions expressed in here are, I guess, representative of our overall feel. I mean, if I say something, I most likely stand by it. But if a guest says something, no, they don't represent us. So that said, this has nothing to do with Rick Perry adding me on his LinkedIn, okay? Although I thought that was really weird. There are people who are attached to my LinkedIn that I'm a little concerned on how they found me or why they added me. But yeah, remember, our political views are not necessarily the views of our guests. So there is a little bit of politics in it. But yeah, there's also an interview with Tony Oliver. Most people don't know who he is, but he's actually the voice of Rick Hunter from Robotech. And he's... Oh, just listen to it. The interview's pretty good. You'll be surprised what it is he did. We have... If you were like me and you grew up with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, you got to thank this guy. It's pretty cool. But those are our interviews. We're going to get to those in our features, and then we'll be right back here to say goodnight. So, see you on the flip side, everybody. And welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I'm here at NondeskCon 2011 with...
Chris Kaysen.
And Chris, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I'm a voice actor and director and writer for Funimation Entertainment, although I also do some other projects that are away from Funimation, like different video games and things like that. I suppose, in terms of voice work, I would be most known for... Gluttony from Full Metal Alchemist, or Mr. Popo and Tien Shinhan from DBZ, or Holy Roman Empire from Italia, or, well, stuff like that. I always just keep going, but yeah. I didn't know that you're the Mile High Mouth, by the way.
Oh, it's just kind of a moniker that's been added to the show as we go along, because when I used to do these before, they'd refer to me on other podcasts as the Mouth from the Midwest, the Mouth of the Midwest, and I was like, well, I moved out over here, I guess this works now.
Yeah, it still works, still applies.
So, how did you get into voice acting?
Well, I was an actor. I mean, the short answer that I have is that I was an actor living in Dallas, and Funimation was built in my backyard. That's the shortest answer possible. I was an actor living in Dallas, and I had a friend who said, "Hey, they're actually what he said was, hey, they're auditioning for cartoons in Fort Worth. You should do it." I did. It was a lot of fun, and I said, "Okay, fine." And I go into this building, and I look at a bunch of crazy-looking characters, and I read for, you know, five or six of them, and then I go home and leave, not thinking anything about it. And then I get a call about a week later, hey, we want you to come in, you got a couple of parts, you're playing Mr. Popo and Tien Shinhan for a show called Dragon Ball Z, and I thought, okay. So, not knowing what that would really mean later, and I went in to record, and I left thinking, well, this will be fun for a while, it'll probably never go anywhere. And, whoops, was I wrong. You know, it just exploded. And I'm so thankful that it did. So,
you've done some video game work. What video games have you worked on?
Well, let's see. I've done a lot of games that were tied into the anime that I worked on. I've done some Full Metal games and some DBZ games, a Yu Hakusho game, Donkey Kong Country. I worked on the Ghostbusters game. That was really cool because I was at a con and I had and someone came through the line and they wanted me to sign the cover of the Ghostbusters game, and I looked, and Dan Aykroyd had already signed the cover. So I thought, wow, I'm signing next to Dan Aykroyd's name, that's so cool. So that one, and then I got to play guitar on Guitar Hero 3, that was kind of neat. That's not voice related, but it was kind of fun. And then I have another really big game that I'm unfortunately sitting on that I can't talk about until spring of next year.
So not related to Donkey Kong Country, of course, right?
Not at all.
Okay.
No.
So, in Donkey Kong Country Returns, or the original one? The one on the Wii?
The most recent one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what voice did you do in Donkey Kong Country Returns?
Well, mostly, they had a lot of creatures in it. I do a lot of creature voices almost exclusively, it seems. I did different creatures, most notably, there's a huge attacking oh gosh, was it attacking hawk or bird or something like that? I can't remember the character name, but I did that. I was just screeching for hours on end, so that was pretty fun.
Can you give us a creature noise? Any random creature noise?
Any random creature noise? My gosh, let's see. There's a dog.
Okay, I guess that works.
Sure, well, that's Whitey. There's Whitey the dog from Shin-Chan, for example.
Oh. So, you said you did acting before you got into voice acting. What was it? What did you do? What was it?
Stage acting.
Stage acting.
I was in an improv and comedy troupe, and that's where I met, by the way, the guy, the friend who told me to audition, was my friend in the comedy troupe, and his name was Mike McFarland, and he went on to be in DBZ as well, and also direct, and I mean, he does tons of things. So yeah, it was definitely that. And I did some commercial work, but mostly a lot of stage stuff before the voice work started happening. And it's just a weird thing that my first job in voice work or voice acting happened to be Dragon Ball Z. It's kind of a rarity. Of course, that's back when the talent, I should say, the talent list or the actor roster for Funimation was probably... It was much smaller because they were just getting started, and now we have an actor database there of at least 400 people. So it's gotten a little cutthroatier, I suppose, or a little harder to break into.
With all the new people in that, it's kind of a little. Do you have any dirt on any of them? Like we've done a bit of we did an interview already with Patrick Seitz and I forgot his name. Todd Abercorn. Mm-hmm. And also like Jeremy Lee and Kyler Bear. Any interesting stories about any of them?
Well, one of the things you learn as a director is the art of diplomacy. I would say that because, you know, an actor, particularly an anime, you know, they come in one at a time to record, of course. So they come in, there's a director and an engineer in the room, and that's it. And so it's very possible that an actor could come in, record an entire show, which is either, you know, 12 to 25 or 6 episodes or whatever it is, and never meet the person that they kill or kiss or you know, their mom or whatever it is in the show. But in the case of the director, you have maybe 5 or 6 actors coming in per day, so you get to meet all of them, and so you can find out a little bit about their lives and all kinds of stuff. So I guess I'm choosing to, in a self-preservation move, I'm choosing to keep tight lips so that they keep coming back. So, yeah.
So, where did you draw the inspiration for your creature voices, or say, like, Gluttony? Gluttony's got an interesting voice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of it, in that case, that was me as a voice actor, and I wasn't directing myself. It was directed by Mike McFarlane and Colleen Klinkenbeard, and, I mean, the first season. And a lot of it was based on the Japanese approach. And we just tried to emulate that as close as we could. Of course, in the case of Full Metal Alchemist, unlike some other shows, the Japanese representatives required final say on all the characters. So once we in-house figured out who we wanted it to be, they then shipped that off to Japan, who then made their final, or who agreed or disagreed with what was selected. So I guess they thought that I was just doing it as close to, you know, as close to the original Gluttony as possible. Although it is funny, you know, that could almost be its own panel at a con, which is jobs that voice actors didn't get. Because, I auditioned for Gluttony, but that wasn't the only character I auditioned for. We usually audition for at least 3 parts per show. So I think it's kind of interesting. These are the parts that we have, but it would be interesting to see the parts that we didn't quite get, because everyone has a story like that. So that's kind of neat.
Now, this is being a little bit heavy because tomorrow is September 11th, mm-hmm. the 10th anniversary of the event. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think...
do you remember where you were?
I do, actually. I remember where I was. I remember I was driving out to... I was in Louisiana driving out to a gig, a performing an acting job. And I remember, of course, it was shut down. By the time I got there, it had all happened. And so, you know, everything, the whole world had felt stopped on that day. And I remember seeing Air Force One flying overhead, actually. And it was a very sobering, somber... I mean, I hope to never... it was an experience that I'd never felt before, and I hope to never feel again, because it was just, I mean, it felt like you just didn't know what was going to happen. It was a very frightening time. So I remember it very well. And I also think that it's great, by the way, that a decade later, our country has not experienced anything like that up to this point. You know, I think that's a testimony to a lot of people working very hard to ensure that that's the case. So, I do remember that day very well, and hope that anyone shouldn't go through that again. So,
on a slightly light, on a lighter note, since you've done video game work, and that's usually in L.A., and animation work, which is usually in Texas,
yeah.
How hard is it to get a job between, say, California or Texas, which is a right-to-work state?
Well, I have done some video games in Texas, too. The ones in... It depends on the game, because some games in California you can do that are not unionized, and some are. Most are. It just depends. I'm not a member of the unions, of course, because I am from Texas, but I guess I've just been lucky so far. But there could come a time when I would have to, you know... If I do enough games in California, I would have to make that decision to become a union member, and I'd have to weigh if it was worth it. And I hope that the answer would be that it was worth it, because that would mean that I'm working a lot of games. So that would, because I mean, there's so much fun to work on. I'm certainly prepared to do that, because I mean, the video game, the anime industry right now is kind of in flux. It's funny. There are more cons, it seems, every year. First year cons, I've been to quite a few this year alone. First year cons But anime itself is sort of, like, the Japanese output of anime itself is decreasing, yet there are more cons than ever. So, you have that going on, yet video games are really thriving. And many of them are out of California, and I would love to be even more of a part of that, so.
Well, I'm going to have to throw this one out, because you live in Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't thrown this one out yet to a lot of the other people living there in Texas, but...
Oh, good.
What do you think of Rick Perry?
There's a movie. Here's my thing about Rick Perry. Well, they say no politics, no religion, but I'll make an exception in this particular case. There's a movie and there's a book by Stephen King called The Dead Zone, and there's also a movie made from the book of The Dead Zone with Christopher Walken as the hero, and it's about a man who can shake your hand, and he's jolted, and he can see into that person's future. So, like, if the person's going to be a millionaire one day, he can shake their hand and know that one day that person will be a millionaire. Well, there's a guy running for local mayor, some smaller political office, and he shakes his hand, and he finds out that that man is going to one day bring forth Armageddon itself. And he tracks this guy's career, and at the end of the movie or book, we see that the same man ends up running for president, and he... knows that he's going to bring upon the end of the world, and he tries to assassinate him, and he himself, spoiler alert, he's assassinated. He dies at the end. So he dies without being able to get his message out. Here's my message. Run, don't walk. I'm not a Rick Perry fan.
Oh, okay. I was like, he's like the Dead Zone. I'm like, okay, I don't think he's a, yeah.
Yeah, that's my long-winded answer of saying no good.
Not a big fan.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's like I hadn't really dragged too much politics into these aside from asking about 9/11. One question I've also thrown out here, actually, considering the earthquake that happened in Japan with the resulting tsunami,
mm-hmm.
where do you think our memory of that will be in the next 5 or 10 years? What can we do to keep that memory? Because it's very important for Japan to keep that memory fresh, because sometimes... here in America, we tend to have somewhat of a ADD approach to our memory, and it's surprising that September 11th has kept as relevant as it has over these last 10 years. How can we keep what happened in Japan relevant?
Well, that's one of those things that I suppose that's... I may be mixing metaphors, but I believe that's a butterfly effect where... if a butterfly flaps its wings in Brazil, it rains in Wisconsin, or something to that effect, which is to say we're all interconnected. And that's one really interesting thing about one of the cool things about traveling so much and doing a lot of these conventions is that you get to meet a lot of different people from all over, and you see how dependent we are on each other and how one thing does affect another. That said, I think it seems like, you know, there have been great efforts to try to help out Japan, obviously. In fact, I think this very con is responsible for raising an incredible amount of money for that. In terms of remembering, you know, I certainly hope people do, but at the same time, it's one of those really unfortunate sort of natural disasters that, unlike a terrorist act, for example, it seems almost impossibly... I don't know how you would prevent such a thing from happening, you know, and then the after effects. All I can say is that, in terms of remembering, I guess we... I'm not sure the best way to do so, I suppose. That's a head-scratcher. Because the most anyone could do initially, of course, is just to donate a little bit of money for the relief, of course. And then in terms of remembering, I don't know if... I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure about that answer. I'm a little stumped because I'm sure there are a lot of people who would choose to not remember that happened to them. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure. I don't know if it's something that... I'm not sure that's something that everybody would want to remember. I don't know if they're going to have some kind of memorial. I don't know if they're going to have some kind of anniversary. I don't know what they're going to do, but I know that it's definitely in America's best interest to think globally versus nationally. Although I have to say, I think part of the problem, if it is, well, it is a problem. Part of the problem that America has is that it's such a large landmass and so populated that, you know, many people live, born and die in the same city, and they never really get out of that. So I think it's easy to kind of have tunnel vision. But, you know, whether it's donating money outside of America or seeing how the politics in one country affects this country, I think it's great to be globally minded for sure.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of tunnel vision, I've noticed something at a lot of anime conventions where a lot of people have a lot of energy, they're very outspoken, very... the opposite of shy at conventions, but when they go out into the real world, like school or work or their everyday life, they tend to clam up to get that little tunnel vision, to get into a little bit of a shell. Do you have any advice for helping people get out of that?
Well, I think that's one of the great things about conventions, or anime conventions specifically, is that finally these are people who everybody gets to meet, like-minded people. And they say the number one psychological need of human beings is to belong. And I think that's what's so great about them. Because, you know, they have guests, and I'm one of them, and that's great. But really, it's about the attendees, of course, and they would like to interact with each other and meet each other, and that's what's so great. If you're asking advice on how to become more extroverted...
Extroverted, yes.
Wow, I guess it would be that... I mean, you know... That's just, I guess it's sort of like telling an addict to just say no. I mean, it's harder, it's easier said than done. But I think part of going from introvert to extroverted is maybe the fear that of rejection, the fear that someone's not going to like you for you or listen to you. But in my travels, I've found that that's not the case, you know, if you believe in the good in people in general, people are open to you and your ideas, and I think it's worth trying. You know, because the rewards are greater than not trying. So, and also there's the theory that everybody you meet has something new to teach you, even if it's what not to do. So it's worth exploring. So I would say cut back a little bit on the fear and just get out there and meet people. And I think you'll be greatly rewarded by trying it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for this interview.
Oh, sure.
This is Philip Wesley, The Mile High Mile, and I'm here with...
Chris Kaysen.
And we're at NDK 2011. Thank you very much for the interview.
Thank you.
This is Minmay. You're listening to Radio DMG. Oh, Rick.
This is Rick Hunter, and you're listening to Radio DMG. Oh, Minmay.
And welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I'm here with...
Tony Oliver.
And we're at NonDescon 2011. So, Tony Oliver, what is it you do?
Well, I'm a voice actor. Mm-hmm. I have been for most of my life. I'm also a director and a producer, and sometimes writer. Actually, anything someone will pay me to do, I'll do. Within reason.
So you've voice acted in Robotech, a couple other things, but you've also produced... what was that show you produced? I'm trying to remember.
The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Ah. So how was... when were you approached with the idea of bringing over a Sentai film, a Sentai genre film show, to the United States?
Well, I was working as a staff producer at Saban Entertainment, and I was part of the... at the time, they developed kind of a development brain trust. Whenever they had an idea, they would bring some of us up, and we'd hash it out. It was kind of my turn. It was a bit of the luck of the draw. And I went up, and Chaim Saban showed me and the executive, Ellen Levy-Sarnoff, who was there. He showed us this weird show with... people in spandex jumping around and big latex monsters destroying Tokyo, and said and explained what he wanted to do. He explained this, I want to make an American show around this and take out all the footage that looks like Japan and make it look American. What do you think? And I don't know if I said it or thought, but I said, I think you're out of your mind. But it was his idea, and they've been trying to do something like this for years. And so we cut up the footage, took out anything that wasn't Asian, and just kind of slapped it all together, all the explosions and the fights, through a rock and roll soundtrack, and showed it to a bunch of kids, and they went crazy. And so that's how the show was born. So my job was to kind of do, since I had an anime background, kind of figure out how to blend the American and the Japanese show together so it made one cohesive show. I was the head writer for the first three seasons, too.
So, since you've worked with Carl Masek, did you kind of steal some of his little ideas, like what he did with Robotech?
Well, no. I mean, Carl is a genius, first of all, and that's not something I am. But what I did take from Carl is this notion that when you're telling a story, you have to tell the story completely. There has to be some depth. There has to be some fun to it. Carl was a consummate storyteller, and I learned a lot working with him on how that happens and how a story needs to sweep through, especially when you're doing a story based on footage that you didn't create, which Robotech and the way he pulled those three shows together to make that work. So no, I didn't take anything from that because it's a completely different kind of show, but I did learn a lot working with him, that was the first TV series I ever worked on was Robotech, and so it's more the education, the experience that I was able to bring into play into that.
Do you prefer working with animation or live action?
Yes. I like it all. I was a theater geek when I was young, and so I love working in all the genre. I haven't done live action in quite a while. I'm kind of itching to do it again. Animation is a lot of fun because you have no limitations, and especially now with the ability to do some of the 3D animation that's available at relatively low cost. It's whatever you can imagine can be done now. And I also do theater. I still direct. I just directed a musical for Hollywood Fringe Festival this last year.
Oh.
So I like working in all the genres.
What was the theater production that you directed?
It's for the Tribe Productions. I directed a show called Working, which was based on a Studs Terkel novel that Stephen Schwartz wrote the music for, and James Taylor and a few other people. And we did it for the Hollywood Fringe Festival this year as part of the Tribe Productions.
So is that one kind of like How to Succeed in Business without really trying?
No, actually, it's an anthology. Studs Terkel is a Chicago writer who mm-hmm. went around the country talking to regular middle-class working people about their lives and wrote a book on it, which as they told their own stories. And then Stephen Schwartz turned that into a musical where there's these monologues and songs where people talk about normal working life and what's that like. It's very poignant. There's some funny parts to it, but it's definitely not a comedy.
Definitely not. Since you said you did a lot of theater before you started voice acting and such, do you remember the first theatrical production you were in?
The first theatrical production that I was in that I remember, I was a teenager. It was the Teenage Drama Workshop. Were you talking about professional or otherwise?
Either. The earliest one, yeah.
The earliest one that, I mean, I did some little stuff in junior high school, but the first big production I was in was with the Teenage Drama Workshop at Cal State Northridge, which still exists. They still mm-hmm. run it. It's called TADWA, anybody who lives in that area. And I did A Midsummer Night's Dream, Shakespeare. I played Lysander, and the woman who played Puck is named Mare Winningham, who's now an Academy Award and Emmy Award winning actress. So we had a great cast of people. Wendy Jo Sperber was in it. She eventually went on to have her own show on Fox and do a lot of Spielberg films. And so, yeah, it was kind of a nice breeding ground for us young performers.
Mm-hmm. So working with, like, let's go back to Power Rangers for mm-hmm. a bit. What was it like working with, like, Jia Young Bosch? Or can you give us, like, an embarrassing story about them? Because, like, I've met some of them. I've met Amy Jo Johnson. I've met... Jia Young Bosch. I've met a few of these people. Give us some dirt.
Well, no, I'm not going to give you dirt. But I will tell you that Johnny's got one of my favorite lines in all the Power Rangers episodes and movies, and it's in the film. And it's when he's given his coin, and he looks at it and goes, "I'm a frog." And I was there when they shot it, and I just fell out of my chair. And the reason is that he was actually disappointed as a human, you know, as an actor, that he traveled all this way and he gets to be a frog. He wanted to be a mastodon or something big, you know, but he's going to be, and I thought that was just very funny.
Did you write that line for it?
No. The film was written by 20th Century Fox writers. Oh, okay. I was just there consulting.
Consulting?
Yeah.
Because you'd worked on the series.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was the idea about... what was the impetus behind injecting Bulk and Skull into that as the comic relief? Was there anything like them in the Japanese version?
No, and that's why we did it. I mean, part of it was to Americanize it a little bit more. Part of it was because the Japanese Sentai series are very serious. I mean, there's some comedy, but they like in the current series Samurai in the Japanese show, a couple of the characters are somewhat comic. But that's not the archetype of a superhero in American culture. They tend to be serious or straightforward. Plus, quite frankly, comedy takes a higher skill of acting than drama does. And we were more concerned with the physicality of the Power Rangers and their abilities to do their own stunts and things like that than we were with any depth of acting. I mean, there was only, when the original cast, I think it was only three of the original six cast actually had any acting experience at all before they walked in front of those cameras. So we wanted to inject some funny into it, because a kid's show needs to be funny. And Chaim Saban tasked us with making, quote, a live-action cartoon. That's the way he wanted it to play. So we brought Bulk and Skull in. And actually, in the original pilot, Bulk was the sidekick, and Skull was a little bit more serious, a different actor, and a little bit more serious, and it just didn't work. But he was so good and engaging, so we dropped the guy who was playing Skull. We made Bulk the lead guy, and we let Paul Schreier pick his own sidekick. He did the auditions for his sidekick, and he's the one that picked Jason Narby.
That's excellent. Yeah. I think that was a good idea to give him that leeway on there.
Yeah.
There's a type of method acting called enforced method acting. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's used in animation where they don't tell you what's going to happen in the script. Sometimes it's used in live action where... They keep stuff hidden so there's genuine shock on mm-hmm. audio. Have you ever used that? And what do you feel about that? Do you feel it's dishonest to the actors?
The answer to that is yes, no. Mm-hmm. I've had it used on me, and in fact, the first time it was used on me was in Robotech. Mm-hmm. I didn't know Roy Forker was going to die till I read it in the script standing in front of me. I was in the booth doing the scenes when I... Well, oh, my God, he died? And which at the time I'd never seen, there was not, you know, animation, cartoons, people don't die. And here's the main character dying in episode 18 or whatever it was. And it was shocking to me, and it was so effective that I use it now sometimes with actors. I did it last with Kyle Hebert in Gurren Lagann. But we didn't tell him that he was going to die. And he's in the booth going, "Oh, I'm going to die? Aww." You know? Well, he didn't realize that the character continued on even though he was dead.
Yeah. It's a thing.
I don't think it's dishonest. I think in certain circumstances it's actually a good thing, because you want... There's a certain level of honesty you have to get in a performance. And sometimes when you're in a booth situation and it's just you and a microphone, it's a little, you know, it's a little hard to put yourself in that place. And if you can throw a few little things at actors... as long as they know that's what you're going to do, I think that's fine. I think that works. I don't believe in that on a stage. Right. Live in front of an audience, no. No.
Going back to the stage, have you been, have What musicals have you been in, and have you been in any Sondheim musicals?
I've done, God, a number of musicals. I can't even remember. I've done, in the last few years I did, because I still do theater, even though that's kind of more of a hobby for me now. I've done Working. I did The Fantastics last year at the Hollywood Fringe Festival. I played one of the dads. I've done My Fair Lady. I've done Guys and Dolls, a couple of original musicals, one that I helped write called Play On. I've done some Sondheim, but never a full Sondheim musical. I was in a Sondheim review where I realized that Sondheim hates singers. It's the most difficult stuff to learn how to play, how to do. But yeah, I love Sondheim musicals.
Kind of like the whole Into the Woods. If you could pick
one,
which one
would you be in? That's so hard to sing.
If you pick one of his, which would it be?
I'm not sure. I like A Midsummer Night's Dream. A Little Night Music, I thought was really good. I'd like to do Into the Woods at some point. I was cast in Assassins, but then the production was canceled. So I thought that was going to be interesting, controversial, a bit controversial. And we may do Company next year.
Excellent.
So I don't know. I may get to do it yet.
And maybe you'll get to the part where you're like, "Marry me a little." That one.
Yeah, I'm a little old for that part, but yeah.
Possibly, yeah. this will be like our final question. Let's see. Out of all of your work that you've done, what would you want people to remember you the most for?
I don't know. I, that's a good question. I'm not done.
Not done yet.
So I don't think I've done the thing yet that I want to be remembered for, but we'll see. I just want to be remembered for being a good, honest performer who told good stories and directed well and had some integrity in his business dealings and in his creative art. Mm-hmm. So I guess that would be it.
Okay. Thank you for the interview today.
Can I plug something?
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm doing a lot right now is I'm teaching voice acting classes all across the country. It's called Adventures in Voice Acting. In fact, I'm going to do a mini workshop here in Nundescon right after we're done with this.
Oh.
They are professional workshops, full-day workshops, 8 hours. I have a beginning, an intermediate, and advanced where I teach fundamentals of voice acting, how to do anime, how to do games, how to audition, and how to develop characters. And I'm doing them all across the country. We're based in Los Angeles, but I do them in New York and Chicago and hopefully here in Denver someday. And if anybody's interested, they can go to www.adventuresinvoiceacting.com.
All one word?
Yep.
All one word.
All right.
Thank you for your time today. This has been Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I've been here at Nondescon 2011 with...
Tony Oliver. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
And that's how the interview went down with, both interviews. The musical interlude we had in the middle is Museum Number 1 by the chiptune group 6955. Unfortunately, it's kind of hard to find their music these days because their official site is sometimes up, sometimes not up. Just do a DuckDuckGo search on them. Oh, by the way, they're not a sponsor or anything, but I would actually recommend people check out DuckDuckGo. That's DuckDuckGo.com. You can do secure searches. They don't bubble you. Look it up, actually, on there. They've got a little bit where they talk about it. Apparently, Google and Google Plus saves all of your search history and then tailors your search results to match your what they perceive your ideology to be. And I believe that's a bit unfair. And mean that there's something really, really off about that. It may have to do something with that Google X project that they're working on. We don't know. I know Google's slogan is "Don't be evil," but you can't help but wonder if they are. So I'd rather go ahead and trust my search results to feathered friends at DuckDuckGo.com. They've even got a Firefox plugin, which is what you should be using. Honestly, if you're not browsing DMGIce.com on a tablet, you should be using Firefox. Or if you're one of those people who's personal computer challenged and you have like a Macintosh product, use Safari. It still looks good on that. Please don't use Internet Explorer. It looks kind of awful on that for some reason, which is really, really weird because like ancient versions of Internet Explorer or even Mozilla, like the ancient Mozilla Netscape stuff, still displays the website correctly. However, I mean, even Hot Java displays the website correctly. But Internet Explorer doesn't. It's so weird. But yeah, that's our show for today. We're a little bit under an hour. I understand that. But hey, we'll have more next week. Or any type of... We might have a New City episode this week if there's anything huge and breaking that shows up. But yeah, see you next week. See you next week. This is Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, signing out for Radio DMG on November 14th, 2011. Good night.
Get out of here, Dewey.
What are y'all doing in here?
Listening to Radio DMG.
And you don't want no part of this shit.
You're listening to Radio DMG.
Yeah, of course we are. Can't you smell it?
No, Sam. I can't.
Come on, Dewey. Join the party.
No, Dewey. You don't want this. Get out of here.
You know what? I don't want no hangover. I can't get no hangover.
It doesn't give you a hangover.
Well... I'll get addicted to it or something?
It's not habit forming.
Oh, okay, well, I don't know. I don't want to overdose on it.
You can't OD on it.
It's not going to make me want to have sex, is it?
It makes sex even better.
Sounds kind of expensive.
It's the cheapest drug there is.
Hmm.
You don't want it.
I think I kind of want it.
Okay, but just this once. Come on in.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and test the audio. Go ahead and say something.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Audio check 1, 2, 3.
Let's see how that sounds. Let's go ahead and say something real quick.
Say something real quick.
Okay, let's test.
There is no way out. Absolutely none. No way. That's it. Got it?
You promised you would be my guinea pig, didn't you? Hello!
No!
I got magic fingers!
I don't care!
Well, I'm a renowned genius, you see, and you're a gloopy glob of weird stuff.
How do you know about Tenshi?
As you are connected with Ryooki, so am I connected with you, my dear. So I know everything.